Hi there, this is Andy Tillison from The Tangent speaking, and you're listening to Michael's Record Collection.
Hello, and welcome to Michael's Record Collection, where we talk about great music with the people who make it and the people who love it. I am your host, Michael Citro. This is episode number 133, and my guest... it's Andy Tillison of The Tangent. He rejoins me after visiting a couple of years ago. Andy and The Tangent are back with a brand new album. It's called To Follow Polaris. It drops today as this podcast drops on the 10th of May. And the weird thing about this Tangent album is it is Tangent for one. Andy Tillison did all of it himself. Guitars, bass, drums, all of it. Artwork. I mean, the guy did everything. A lot of his bandmates were off doing other things, and he decided to do things a little differently this time. But it's just a one-off. The full Tangent will be back for the next album, but it was nice to hear why Andy did this and all about the new album, and I think you're going to like it if you like previous Tangent releases. Before we get to that interview, I'd like to remind you that you can go to michaelsrecordcollection.com, and there are links there to everything, including how to get my newsletter. It's absolutely free. You can sign up for that. You can also find a link there to my Patreon. Go there, find my different levels of support, and if one of them is right for you, would love to have your support for this independent podcast. There's also links there to all my social medias. It's at Mike's Records on Twitter and Michael's Record Collection on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. Would love to hear from you. Please drop me a line. You can reach me at michaelsrecordcollection@gmail.com. All right, with all of the housekeeping out of the way, I'm excited to bring you my interview with Andy Tillison of The Tangent, and in this case, he is The Tangent. Here we go. I am happy to be rejoined by Andy Tillison of The Tangent. Andy, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thank you very much indeed. Nice to see you, Michael, and have the record collection behind you, of course. So there you go.
Yeah, it's lovely to see you again. And I have to say, I said Andy Tillison of The Tangent, but in this case, as we're about to talk about To Follow Polaris, new album coming out May 10th on Inside Out Music, Andy Tillison is The Tangent.
Well, just on this one, yeah. This is a, you know, it's not a shape of things to come. It's a diversion, you know. I think that... you know, when a band's made as many records as we have, it's a good job to sort of shake the tree from time to time, see what happens, do something different. And everybody else was very busy and all sorts of things going on. So I took the opportunity to make a Tangent record that follows one path rather than the usual path. So, you know, that's what it's all about. And, been a very interesting experience, but yes, on this album it's entirely me to blame. So if you're an Andy Tillison hater, you get to go, oh, it's all crap and it's all his fault. So there you go.
Yeah, so this that you were telling me, the story goes that, you know, everybody was kind of touring the world with various bands and projects, and this is all you wrote it, you recorded it. Now we know about Andy Tillison, the keyboard player. I'm interested to learn about Andy Tillison, the drummer, or Andy Tillison, the bassist. Was there anything that you wanted to play on this record that was a little bit outside your comfort zone, or maybe that you had to alter because you couldn't quite get what you were going for?
I think that, you know, being really, really honest, is that, like, I really see myself mainly as a kind of composer and songwriter. And so basically, throughout the whole of the Tangent, everything has been just a little bit beyond my reach, really. You know, because being in a band with the kind of musicians I'm in with, it does nothing more than make me reach higher every time to try and, you know, keep up with them, be able to assimilate the ideas that they have and analyze the way they play and you know, learn to write my music to give them space in which to occupy. So, you know, doing it this way meant that I was leaving myself that space, and I knew I would have to fill it in a way that was, so we say, in line with their thinking, you know, because it's a tangent record. So I played their parts in any sense. They're not necessarily the parts they would have chosen. In fact, they're definitely not the parts they would have chosen, but they're the parts that I imagine that they would have kind of come up with, and the sort of things they would have done. And yeah, it was a very interesting experience taking on the part. And it's interesting how you say Andy Tillison, the bass player, and Andy Tillison, the drummer. So I thought of this very much in that way. When I was actually working on drums, I felt that I was a different character within the story, and I had to act that part of, you know, that character out. Mm-hmm. I had to act out the bass player, and I had to act out the guitarist and the wind player. So, you know, and fight my way to the front in all cases, you know, like in all musical ensembles, you know, there's a desire to sort of like have a moment when you shine, as opposed to other people in the group. And, you know, I was sorting that out as I went. So it was, you know, the odd moment when these people disagreed with each other, even though that technically they were the same person. But, you know, I did have disagreements with the different characters I was playing in this game. So there you go.
That's very interesting. I was going to ask you, it sounds like the answer is yes. I was going to ask you if these different characters had their own distinct personalities, but it did sound like that they had those different personalities.
I think it had to, because when a tangent record gets made, it normally goes through this whole procedure, and there is always a kind of finished product before the band come on. It's nowhere near as well put together as this, but there's drums, there's bass, there's guitar, there's wind instruments, and it's all there. And then I send them out to the band and ask them to, you know, do these imitation parts as well as possible, you know. And that's what they do. They come in and they change it and make it happen. And then this time round, that was all down to me. So then, yes, if I'd just stuck with being one character, it would have just ended up sounding like one of my demos. But that was exactly what I was trying to avoid. So I had to take on this sort of multiple characters in the story role, you know. Maybe like Peter Sellers playing all these different parts in Doctor Strangelove, you know. He was different characters within the same film, and I guess I had to do something that was similar to that and take that on in my head whilst I was doing it. Yeah,
Andy, when you sat down to do this album, knowing this was all going to be you playing all the parts and everything, was there a conscious effort on your part to not stray very far from what your fans might expect from a Tangent album? Was it important to retain the quote unquote Tangent sound, although that does change a bit from album to album?
It does, yes, to be fair. But, you know, this one, I did it as a Tangent record. I mean, I have different strings to my bow, and I do different kinds of music outside the Tangent. Of course I do. But once I started this one, I realized that, you know, this is going to be a Tangent record, and I thought, well, you know, let's just on this occasion see what happens if I try to take the whole thing to completion from this point. And yeah, so it does, it has the Tangent sort of like sensibilities about it. The core of it is, you know, exciting English progressive rock music, I guess, really is what I'm trying to create. Whether it's exciting or not is entirely up to the listener, but and I wanted it to have the usual deviations, the usual inclusion of more modern musical styles and production techniques. I wanted to have the usual Tangent sort of like looking at and writing for a world in 2004 rather than one in 1970. Mm-hmm. Take on board all the sort of 50 years of musical history since progressive rock had its first moment in the sun, you know. So I do all that, and that's basically what the tangent is, this sort of general mix from In Our Way, and I continued that mix, and there's some what I'd call covert hip-hop in this one, you know, that people will be able to hear without realizing it's hip-hop, and there's certainly no rapping on it, but, like, you know, it's nice music, but it's a hip-hop rhythm and a backbeat, and you know, that's something that, you know, I haven't done that much before. So, yeah, nice to do.
And you were able to stretch out and do, you know, some of your the varied influences, the varied likes that you have in terms of there's, for example, an ambient middle section on Alike in the Darkness. You've got the bonus track Tea at Betty's is a jazzier number that, you know, and the Tangent has dabbled in those things, but never like fully embraced it for a full album, but you're able to get those influences still all throughout this album.
Yes, that's, you know, I've had a very long life loving all sorts of different kinds of music. Progressive rock wasn't my first love. My first love was classical music, you know. That's what I grew up spending the first sort of 12 years of my life being, you know, regaled by Stravinsky, Beethoven, Brahms, and amazing composers like that. Discovering Yes, age 12, discovering the Sex Pistols, age 17, discovering Joy Division, age 20, you know, and then just, you know, on moving on and sort of finally discovering electronic dance music and DJ culture style music, people like Square Pusher, Groove Armada in more recent years, Aphex Twin, Radiohead, you know. I'm still a little bit behind. I've got to find out what Taylor Swift's all about, really, at some point. But I don't know enough of her music yet to sort of work out whether there's anything there that I can sort of tinker around with myself. But, you know, in the end, it doesn't matter. She's doing perfectly all right without me, I can assure you. So,
she's doing okay for herself, I hear.
Yeah, she's done all right. Yeah, I could do with her bank balance at the moment, but there you go.
In the North Sky. In the North Sky. In the North Sky. That's where I'll find everything I'm searching.
Andy, when you're recording an album that's all you, who pushes back? Who is the person that says, maybe try that, but maybe in a slightly different way?
I take a hell of a lot of care when I'm writing. And for example, if I'm writing a 20-minute long piece and I do something that changes it, and I'm, let's say, it's 15 minutes into the song, I decide I'm going to change a sound. Yeah. That will mean for me that I have to listen to the whole piece from the beginning to the end just to check that. Right. Mm. Because it's not just a question of how it sounds at that moment. It's a question how it relates to the whole thing. And I think that I have I've already talked about some of my weaknesses as a musician, but as a writer, one of my strengths is to be able to look at what I've done and appraise it and know when I'm losing the audience, when I'm interesting them, you know, and I do it just by listening and teaching myself to actually hear it objectively, not to hear it as the composer of it, but to sit back and listen to it as the listener and say, does it move me? Am I with it? Is it carrying me along? And those are really important things to me. I have several techniques on how that's done. Sometimes I can just do it by focusing very, very much on the whole thing and emptying my mind of any preconceptions about it.
So staying with this, the production idea, what is a lot of, let's say, vocal takes? What is a lot of vocal takes for you? What is a song that maybe you're like, I know I can get this better. I know I can get this better. What is a normal amount of takes, and what is high for you?
Well, the thing is that there's a big change in the way I actually handle vocals, and that happened in 2013. Is that I was actually listening to an interview with a band called Groove Armada, who were using what they called a freestyle rapper on one of their music, and essentially he approached the microphone without any lyrics written down, just heard the music, and just stream of consciousness came out with what he wanted to say. And I thought, there's got to be something in that I can use. There's got to be something in, you know, it just really interested me. And so when I was making this album called Le Cercle de Travail, I actually, which is kind of Stravinsky influence thing, I set the microphone up and just started singing straight out of my brain, really, consciousness. And therefore, the first thing is that I immediately realized, because I'm not a great singer, I realized that it made me sound, I thought I sounded nicer. There's something better about the way I sound. And there's something better about the way I'm saying the words. And of course, it's just the fact that, you know, you read something, you always sound different when you're reading it to how you sound if you're just speaking freely. Just like you and I are talking to each other now. We're not reading from a script. Andy, can you tell me how many, it's not like that. Mm-hmm. So in a sense that since 2013, the Tangents Records, I've been actually talking to you, but singing the talking. And I think it sounds way better, way better. Because it does lead to a lot of mistakes, because sometimes I'll sort of like, be singing and the only word that'll come to my head is something like, cockatoo, which is completely irrelevant to the tangent. So, so that gets erased and I have to sort of like do something and build it up. But of course, by the time I start a song, I know what the song's going to be about, whether it's going to be a kind of a sort of jolly, an amusing anecdote song. I do some of those, and I do these sort of like big political treatises kind of thing. I do those too. I do quite dark, despairing ones, so providing I've got the mood and I know what it is I'm wanting to communicate, it's just a case of, like this interview, I know what I want to say and I'm saying it now, and you're listening and you're understanding it, but I haven't written any of it down. It's just, and I wouldn't be able to say any of it again exactly in the same order. I could say something similar, but it wouldn't be the same. So that's how I'm doing it. So, yeah, it's how long is a piece of string? Sometimes I just do it and it just happens. Kapow, whoa, got a lovely take. And then there'll be ones which I struggle with for ages. I'm like, no, that's awful. I need to approach that again. And, of course, because of this constant re-listening of the whole thing with each new line, It's quite a time-consuming operation, really. I know people think, well, he releases loads of records. No, I don't release loads of records at all. That's those people getting older. It just seems that, I'm still releasing albums less than Yes used to back in the early 1970s. They'd release one a year. Well, I'm doing one every 2 years. That's double the time. So it's...
Just did two a year, some years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. I mean, people forget that Close to the Edge was their fifth album, and it came out 3 years after they started.
Yeah, that was a different time. A week in the studio and you're done.
Yeah, that's it. Very much the case, yeah.
So the subject matter on this album seems very personal to you. It seems like you've taken your somewhat of your moral compass and you've sort of outlined it as if it were a real compass in some ways. There you're talking about going looking to the north sky and when all else is going south, you're pointing north. What was on your mind? You talk a little bit about wokeness and some of those things and the sort of the illusion of freedom when you really only have a couple of choices and you have to make one or the other, but they're basically the same type of choice. What was sort of the overall theme that you were thinking of when you were writing this?
It's an easy answer. The album is just a huge appeal for truth. It's aching to be shown some truth. And I found myself, since 2016, very much sort of like realizing just how much of my life and how much of all my friends' life and all the people I know and love and care about has been based on truth being easily accessible for all life long. And then suddenly it becomes something that's everything is debatable. Everything, you can have an opinion on what shape the earth is, even though you can see what the shape is by looking at a photograph of it is, but you can disagree with that by saying that the photograph was never taken and it's a fake. Fake, 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 fake. Don't just ear one, ear one, out the other. Loads of people, it just took off and everybody will argue about everything. So you do not know what is true anymore. Of course, this is helping certain people make huge amounts of money by just keeping people polarized against each other with these different truths that they say. So I actually wanted to find something that was still true and that was true for everyone, that nobody could deny. You can't find it in religion because one lot of people say, oh, no, that's not right, that's not right. So you can hardly find it in science because you get one group of people saying, oh, scientists are evil. And then, so I thought, well, is there anything? And it took me quite a while to think of it until I just realized it's just there in the sky, the North Star, Polaris. It's there. It doesn't matter what shape the earth is. It doesn't matter whether we went to the moon or not. It doesn't matter whether you support Trump, Biden, Boris Johnson, or Viktor Orban. And no matter what they tell you, the North Star is the one that all the other stars spin around, whatever shape the earth is. And I thought, that's it, And I'm a person who's been singing songs about GPS cultures and GPS vultures for years. And suddenly I'm looking at the original GPS that guided people across the seas before the time of Galileo and will still work, after ChatGPT, So that, and I just thought, well, if we've got that focus, there's something you can look at. You can be optimistic. And there are many, many, many obstacles in the world in front of us all. But you don't just have to look at the obstacles, look over the obstacles to see something that's at the other side that is true. And, you know, that's, to me, what the album's about. It's a kind of very optimistic message about focusing on something higher and trying to reach it with a, but not by ignoring the obstacles in front of us, you know, because of that, you know, if you ignore the obstacles in front of us, you just end up with everything is beautiful kind of songs. And, you know, I'm realistic enough to know that everything is not beautiful. It's just that I think it could be, you know, but that's being naive. But I am naive, which is something I'm proud of. Why not? Why not be naive? It's better.
Yeah, sounds like a more progressive way of saying what John Lennon said, which is just give me some truth.
Yeah, well, truth is so, I mean, fancy devaluing that, you know. And it's taken a massive toll. It's been going down for decades, but suddenly this huge drop we had, you know, here in England with Brexit and the Cambridge Analytica scandal and of how you know we were conned over here, over there, you know. Well, there's quite a lot of stuff happening in America today, which the word truth does not really apply to, particularly when you've actually formed your own social network that's called Truth Social in a world. What is that about? But anyway, I'm not an American. I don't profess to know everything.
Well, I think you got the gist of it. We had an election that was pretty run of the mill, and you know, we have different opinions on who won the election. It's not a matter of opinion. Like you said, you just don't get to make up your own facts. There are actual facts out there if you care to look for them.
Yeah. It was those words, alternative facts, were coined within the first few weeks of Trump's first presidency. Well, the first presidency, hopefully only presidency, but as far as I'm concerned. But, the phrase post-truth and all these things and words like woke that have been bandied around. And, you know, I kind of guess that, you know, if people are talking about woke people, I guess they're talking about me, you know, but that's never what I thought of myself as being, this sort of like dismissive adjective. Oh, he's woke, get rid of him. You know, it's more than just a silly word and name calling. It's, you know, I've got a load of feelings of my own, which I think should be respected in the same way as I would try to respect anybody else, you know. So there you go. But that's just me being naive again.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's there is a lot of I'm with you. If it's naive to think that it's nice to be able to put yourself in the place of another human being to empathize with what they've gone through and their struggles of people that have always been oppressed, that shouldn't be a bad thing. But then we come up with a word for it, and then instantly people start using it as a pejorative. So,
such an unpleasant way to talk to people who, if essentially the people they're describing just want fairness for everybody, you know. And I don't think that we need to, so all I really want to do is write music, and when the world gets into a better place and everything's fine, then I'll write some really cool jazz, you know, you won't need to listen to me sing anymore, because I'll just be able to play this really cool jazz and it'll be great, you know. But until then, I've got to sing. So, yeah. I set myself targets, but I don't always make them. I go for the records, but I don't always break them. And somewhere in the grisly fog, an object looms up for comment. So I grasp it and tie it up and bring it home for you. As if you wanted any thoughts on what that meant.
Andy, what was the most difficult part for you to play in terms of getting the music down that you wanted down for this record?
Bass.
Yeah.
The bass took a lot of time. I've only had the bass since Christmas 2022, so that's only one year and 4 months, you know. And I started learning it, and I had to learn the whole procedure, you know, how to press these really thick strings down, make the contact with the fretboard without buzzing, and move my fingers up and down. It's really hard to sort of control the way it became possible for me to do this, because of the fact that, you know, as a musician, I know how music works, and I knew what I wanted it to do. So all I had to do was just sit there and make it happen. And of course, you know, as I say, that something that Jonas could have accomplished, he could have played one of the songs straight through and got it right. I just had to work on each bit and sort of like think, this is what I want the bass to do and see if I can do it. And so I just press record on loop and I just played a bit over and over and over again, and then perhaps go back and listen to 14 different takes of the same riff and think, yeah, I actually got it right there, you know, and just work my way through it. That's what I had. I had time. And I took that time, you know, so I used time to trade for talent, really, you know. It's not cheating. It's the same procedure as a painter can go through. I mean, a painter does not have to paint his picture and put it straight on the screen in front of you and do it live in front of an audience. A painter can sit in his studio and go, no. And then change it and move it and think, I'll put that window over there a bit and all that kind of stuff. You can do this in music in the same way, but, you know, it's the way of making music now. And there are some people who don't like the fact that musicians can do that now. And because once upon a time, it all had to be live. Yeah. But, you know, it's not about, it's about creating something which is, you know, when you listen to this album that I've just made, you won't be in the room with me. And it will have been made last year, as it happens, you know. So you're already listening to something from the past. It's a recording that I was able to curate, put together, devise, build, edit, and make a statement out of it. And live albums are live albums, and studio albums are studio albums. Two different things altogether. Yeah.
The North Sky was the first single. It kicked things off with an 11-minute song right off the bat. And this one, I wondered about the sequencing of the record. This, to me, sounds the most tangent of all the songs on this record. Was that intentionally why you put it first?
I think that we've always had some, what I would call, along with our really deep and sort of like involved cinematic pieces like Live Back and Think of England, In Earnest, and all the sort of big long ones, and we've done an awful lot of those. We've also liked to have some very direct pop, rocky, progressive rocky songs, you know. And, you know, I very much became aware of the difference, you know, when I was a young lad listening to progressive rock for the first time. And I started when I was 12, by the way. And it didn't take me long to realise that yes, doing Close to the Edge was a different thing to yes, doing Roundabout. And Van de Graaff Generator doing Torn Hearts was very, very different from PFM doing Celebration. And the fact is, I liked both. I liked Celebration for its, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- songs with synth riffs in it like that ever since, you know. But I wouldn't want to be one trick. I always wanted to sort of like have the pop songs and then also have the big cinematic experiences as well to complement them so that the two could sit side by side. So, yeah, The North Sky is quite a poppy, bright, driving along kind of song. You know, it's got a feel of, you know, it feels a bit Yes-y in places, but it also feels a bit like, sometimes it sounds a bit like Highway Star, you know. Yeah, it's got a bit of Deep Purple in there with the grinding organ and rhythm going. But then there's a bit of Gentle Giant in the middle, you know, so you don't... And it starts off with a bit of jungle drum and bass, you know, so which is where the song began. It was originally going to be a drum and bass piece, you know, like Ronnie Size Represent or something like that. Garage drum and bass. Yeah, but it ended up being something completely different. So
much important in my hands, a curator of observations, no one to tell.
Like in the Darkness. Tell me about the origin of this. You've done ambient music before. Where does your love of that style come from?
Well, that comes from, you know, I've always liked. I love Brian Eno's work, his ambient stuff, and of course I like Tangerine Dream a great deal. The ambient section with. In this song, I think he's more inspired by the kind of things that Henry Cow, Van de Graaff Generator might have done. Slightly less lush, more kind of, you know, based around the saxophone, quite a lot of it's based around, and a few electronic sounds in the background. A Like in the Darkness is one of the songs I like the best on this record. It's a song about me and writing, and about writing songs in itself, and like it there's a line in the song where I actually talk about in the darkness I glue components together, and the song does exactly that. It's two ideas essentially. That I was coming home. I live on the side of a hillside. It's very bleak, isolated place. And I live quite high up. And I was on my way home with the dog walking, and it just got dark, and it was very, very foggy. Could hardly see in front. But just for a second, the fog cleared a little bit, and I saw the light in the room I'm now sitting coming out the window and stretching out across the countryside just a little bit. You know, I thought, that's you know, and that, of course, is a light in the darkness. Mm-hmm. And I came home, and I started thinking, yeah, okay, you know, because... there is this loneliness that I'm sure most artists feel when they're in the middle of writing a novel, painting a picture, making an album, where you start to question yourself, will anybody hear this? Will anybody be bothered? Will anybody like it? Will anybody say anything about it? Will anybody buy it? You know, these questions do haunt you as you're working. And then you start thinking, well, you know, there's just me in this little room and this tiny little light going out there. And there's this huge world and an even bigger universe around it. And does it mean anything? And I also was having quite a lot of thoughts about the way the internet's changed and everything. And I've started to feel a little bit alienated on the internet and not able to talk in the same way as I used to be, because for fear of being ridiculed and humiliated and insulted for having the views that I have. And so, you know, I kind of felt there's a kind of darkness on the internet that sometimes when people put likes and smileys on your posts, it's sort of like a light in the darkness. And so, of course, the pun was too big to resist, to calling it a like in the darkness. And bringing these two things together and gluing them together in one song, you know, because like that, it posits the question, you know, that, you know, these terrible things that are happening in the world, floods, wars, you know, massacres, this, that, and the other that are happening in the world. What does my music ever offer other than a little nice riff and pleasing tune that can, you know, but the truth is, I think it actually does. I think we have to carry on doing it because, you know, it doesn't matter how many people we're playing to, just a few is enough, you know, because there's plenty of other people like me who are doing the same thing. And, you know, so that once again, that naivety is there that, you know, it's worth doing, even if it doesn't seem to make a lot of difference. Yeah.
Yeah, because in this case, your music is that light in the darkness. It's the, we need art because art, it is an escape from the ugliness and from the, you know, the things that are out of our control, but also can help us understand the things that are dark and the things that we can't control. So I think we absolutely need that. So I'm glad there are people like you out there that are making this music, not just because I selfishly like the music, but because I think we just need it. I think people need it.
Yeah. And, you know, I believe Taylor Swift holds a similar view. And she's reaching millions and millions and millions of people. So if she's encouraging people towards something better and something that makes their lives more uplifted, then she's absolutely doing the right thing. And, you know, so...
It's all there in black and white in the dictionary.
Fine Line is an 8-minute song that I found the lyrics interesting to this one. Obviously you've already talked about how you sing what you're thinking about and it just kind of comes out that way and you maybe don't sing it the same way twice, but where does, to you, what is the fine line between the government and you? What is that line?
This whole thing was inspired by a Venn diagram, and it was a meme that somebody sent me on the internet. And basically, it was two circles. One said the apocalypse in one circle, and the other circle it said still got to go to work. Yeah, and they'd been brought together, and the bit in the middle said somehow we ended up here. And of course, this has happened during kind of COVID and all these beginning of the wars in Russia and everything like that. We all still got to go to work. We've, you know, but it might end tomorrow. And it was true. We were getting on the bus, going to work. We're maybe in the car, switch the radio on. There'd be, you know, you're on your way to work, and they're saying, you know, the Putin's threatened to use nuclear missiles if we do this, and this is happening, and they're going to do that, and it's going to be terrible. Oh, and by the way, petrol's gone up. The country's going broke, your pension's gone, you know, you're just like, what the fuck? We're all sort of panicking by this news. And I think that, you know, so I've got this image in the song of a guy sitting at his desk with a coffee and a gas mask in his drawer. You know, it's just that sort of black humour, really. And, you know, it's I suppose the fine line is just somehow, it was just my way at the time of expressing the fact that there isn't actually much between any member of government and me. We're both just humans, but somehow this line exists, and there are certain people who exist on one side of us who are telling us what to do and are causing all this trouble, yeah? And us who live on the other side of that line, but we can't even see the line, you know? What is it that makes Donald Trump, Musk, Biden, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, Viktor Orban, Vladimir Putin? What separates them from us? Apart from just sort of like an invisible wall we can't even see, really. So yeah, I think that's what I was saying. It's a bit, you know, it's slightly nebulous, that one, shrouded in, you know, I can't quite explain it in the way I can explain some of the other songs, but it's a black humor song. And you know, whereas Steely Dan might have had the same song and sung about some grubby story about what they did at the weekend with somebody who was far too young to go out with either of them, I'm singing about, you know, sort of weird things happening in the world today and us just accepting it and getting on with life, really. So
The big sprawling epic is the anachronism. This is 21 minutes. Again, you go back to the North Sky lyrics a little bit at the end of this one. And I'm curious as to whenever you write a song this long, do the long songs come together in like four times as long as it takes to write a 5-minute song? Or do they actually come together more quickly than the shorter songs?
The longest to construct song on this album was A Fine Line. That one took the longest. Okay. The anachronism, I can't remember how much longer it took or less long or anything. I mean, to me, the long songs aren't the long songs come naturally to me. And it's not because of any particular skill I have at writing. It's because that's what I grew up with, you know. I mean, like, until I was 12 years old, I used to listen to Beethoven symphonies, which were longer. And I used to listen to Yes, Close to the Edge, and Supper's Ready, and Plague of Lighthouse Keepers, and all the great long pieces, and Echoes, all that sort of stuff, when I was a young man, a teenager. And to me, they all seem perfectly natural lengths for a song to be. They're the songs that influenced me. They're the songs that made me want to become a musician. So inevitably, there doesn't seem anything wrong about writing a song that's long. It just seems, particularly if you've got a lot you want to say in a song, that you couldn't possibly just say in 2 minutes. And I think that, you know, the anachronism's clearly one of those. Because the anachronism is essentially, I mean, some people will mistakenly call it a political thing, and they might say I'm woke or a radical left or something like that. But as a matter of fact, it's not actually about that at all. It's about my total non-acceptance of politics as the way we should live. I mean, it's just a scam now. I mean, you know, everybody's going on about, oh, we need to preserve our democracy. We need to preserve this. We don't want autocracy, theocracy, but all these different ways of governing. They're all kleptocracies. Every last one of them is just people feathering their own nests for their own good. And I don't think there's a single functioning democracy on earth. And I don't, in all these elections that are coming up this year, and there's a hell of a lot of them, not just in the USA and the UK, there's a hell of a lot. I don't see anyone who's qualified to be in charge of the type of people who are on the planet at the moment. You know, we don't look like those people. We don't look like the governments. We've got completely different styles of being now. We've opened up our world to, you know, talking to people who are not the same color as us, not the same religion as us, not the same sexual preference as us. All the different styles of people who are living together do not deserve to be continued to be ruled over by sort of boring old gray men in suits. You know, it's time for that to be reassessed, and it's well overdue, you know, the traditions and everything. So, you know, this song is not really, it's not me about saying don't vote for Trump, vote for Biden. It's not about that at all. It's just a case of let's try to work towards something that's better, that doesn't cause all this hostility every 4 years, that, you know, that something we can all believe in, something like, hey, the North Star, which of course comes back at the end to save the day. You know, so, yeah.
That's
I don't know if this makes any sense at all.
It does. It's a really good topic, I think, because, you know, I hear from both sides over here about how we got to take back our country. Well, our country hasn't gone anywhere. It's still in the same place it's always been.
Yes.
It doesn't matter who's in charge of it. Somebody always wants to take it back.
Yes, that's right. They do. That's it. They want to, I mean, like, make America great again. Well, you know, I mean, like, I went in the 1990s and I thought it was great. I went again in 2005 and I thought it was great. And I went again in 2017 and I thought it was great. So I kind of think, well, what's the problem?
When was it not great? That was my question when I saw the hat for the first time. I was like, when was it not great? It's always been.
And of course, a lot of people ask, but when was it ever great to start with? I mean, that's, you know, yeah, and there's that sort of like glass half empty, half full is an eternal question, isn't it? One of the lines that when I hear the anachronism, there's a line that actually makes me feel really sad in it. And it's just that I find myself nostalgic for trivia, arguments about student loans and some guy who wants to frack in the Cotswolds, because those were the kind of things that were going on in Parliament all the time. You know, just little stories, parochial things, really, you know. But and then, you know, suddenly it's all become hatred of each other. And I've never seen such a vicious election campaign as the one that's going on between Trump and Biden now, except apart from last time, of course. And it's going to be the same in the UK. We're going to have a horrible electoral campaign simultaneously with yours, I would have figured. And it's just going to be ghastly. It really is. And we don't deserve this anymore. We deserve better than that. We don't need to have to live through it all, because in the end of the day, one of the two parties is going to win. You know, we could just do it without all the hassle.
That's true. Yeah. All the demonizing and dehumanizing doesn't need to take place.
Yeah.
Need to be a part of it.
We write the whole thing down. I'll give the job to others to give our life some grounds. Might take the BBC,
culture from their own standpoints and views. But hey,
The single is very appropriately a single off this record. The second one, it had 5,000 views on YouTube in just 3 days, which is pretty impressive. This is a reimagined Parallel or 90 Degrees song. Tell me about the origins of this song and why this was the right time to dust it off.
Well, the thing is, it was on an album called The Time Capsule. So it kind of makes sense. I opened The Time Capsule 27 years after I put it in. Decided that I'd like to do that song again. There were some reasons for why I did it, and I was celebrating something that happened in my life, and I thought, you know, I'm going to add another song to the album, and I thought it's going to be that song, the single. And the reason why the single is so appropriate is that this song, in many ways, whilst we're in PO90 was a band that was different from The Tangent, but this song, the single, kind of would have been for The Tangent if The Tangent had existed at the time, you know, because when you listen to it, it sounds like The Tangent. It doesn't sound quite as much like PO90 as that. Mm. So in many ways, it was the kind of first Tangent song, except it happened before The Tangent. So it was nice to bring it into The Tangent's own repertoire. And the other thing is that it had this kind of theme about it, which was very much about the way people are reporting history. Now, back in the 1990s, I was quite concerned about the way progressive rock music in itself was being represented by organizations like the BBC and CBS and things as being this kind of like fuddy-duddy old music that was pretentious and boring and all that kind of stuff. And I thought, well, you know, if we let organisations like the BBC and Cable Network News, I think was the company I used in the original version, if we let them write the history that way, that's the way people in the future might see the history, and they're writing it wrong, you know, because it was a really good form of music that had lots of exciting things about it, a fabulous fusion of ideas, and why present it in such a horrible way? And of course, I could apply the sentiment of that song in 1997 to the way politics is being run today, and that, you know, that people are writing their own histories. The BBC is saying one thing, and GB News, which is our kind of British cheapo equivalent of Fox, very conservative and kind of getting ultra right wing news. So we've got that now, and they're at each other's throats. And, you know, so, hey, it made sense to put it there. So and it's an uplifting song, I think. It's about the fact that, you know, no matter what all these people say about what we should be doing or shouldn't be doing, we can just go ahead and do it anyway. And so here now, I've got my moment, you know, and I'm going to write it down and write my own bit of history. And I think that's everybody's job to do that, really. So
the North Sky radio edit, you've taken an 11 and a half minute song and made it 3.5 minutes. How difficult is that for you?
Very.
Creator.
it's very difficult. Yeah. The secret of it is to keep the 3 minute song in the back of your mind all the way through it. You know, it's basically the North Sky 11 minute version is an expanded version of the shorter one, but it doesn't mean that either aren't valid. It's very nice to have a piece that can be listened to in two formats. And I think that the great thing about it is that the shorter version does give you the nuts and bolts of the song and that sort of feeling of upness. And it takes it right through, whereas of course the other one gives you pause in the middle and lets you take in a few different sounds and ideas before finally coming back to it. You know, so Yeah, it's very difficult to actually take something and think, right, okay, we need to get rid of that, particularly when you need to get rid of 8 minutes of it. It's, 8 minutes is a lot to lose, and you've got to be quite vicious with yourself, you know, kind of going, all right. But you can do it in the happy knowledge that you're going to be able to keep the original version as well. So that's
it. I imagine it's like trying to cut a novel down to a short story length.
Yes, it must be very difficult, yeah.
And then Tea at Betty's is the bonus track here, 17-minute jazzy number. Where did this originate?
This this was from another project I was going to do that hasn't come to light yet. And I was asked for a bonus track, and I kind of thought, what can I give him? And it's got to be a kind of something that just I've done on my own, so it's got to apply to that. And I thought, you know, Tea at Betty's, it's quite a fun thing. The idea of that is it's a scenario. What I imagined was, wouldn't it be fun? I don't know if you know what Betty's is, but Betty's is a very posh Northern English tea room where elderly, quite wealthy ladies do like to go and have tea and scones. And they might occasionally have a piano bar or a jazz trio playing very quietly in the background. And there'll be chinking of cutlery and crockery, and these very expensive ladies that lunch will, of course, there are men there, of course, but like, you know, it's very, very geared, everything, finest china, beautiful scones, everything ridiculously highly priced. And it's all set in a very quaint old English setting. It's lovely. Very nice place to go. And I just kind of thought, well, wouldn't it be funny if the band were playing, you know, just playing this inane jazz music in the background that nobody's really listening to except for the occasional plight. So I just thought, well, let's have the band getting bored and getting frustrated and starting to do stuff that they're not really supposed to do, and nobody stops them. So, after they've been playing for about 5 minutes, I do leave it quite a long time, you know, in the suddenly, you know, something different starts. It starts to get a bit fusion-y. Mm. And just a few minutes later, it's turned into death metal. And then it's gone sort of funky, and then there's a prog bit, and then there's sort of like a mad vibraphone solo, like something out of Zappa. Then it turns into this sort of grinding bit. There's a huge prog overture comes in it, and then there's this bit where it kind of goes into drum and bass dance music, and then there's a bit of 20th century classical going into a bit of acoustic guitar, and then it all comes back out into the jazz stuff they were playing to start with. And in the meantime, there's the chinking cutlery and everything. It's just been going on all this time in the background, and nobody's taking any notice of the musicians at all. You know, it's just that's all I wanted to do, just give this ridiculous idea and create it in sound, really.
It came off well, I think. This is, it's called To Follow Polaris, comes out May 10th on Inside Out Music. It's available as a deluxe collector's edition CD media book, including a bonus track and a 24-page booklet. You can get it on 180-gram double vinyl gatefold album sleeve, which also includes a bonus track, and you can get it digitally. Andy, when someone listens to this record, which is The Tangent for One, what do you hope that they get at the end of this listening session? What do you hope they take away from that?
Well, I just hope that people enjoy it and are made happy by it. You know, I hope it makes people think. I hope it makes people hopeful and fills them up. Until something better comes along, you know, that's it. That's all any of us can hope for, is to just give people something that they like to listen to. And So it's, you know, that's it. Same for me, same for Michael Jackson when he was alive, same for Taylor Swift now, same for Paul McCartney. You know, we just want to make people a bit more aware of the world, a bit more aware of other people's perspectives on the world, and enjoy the joy of enjoy of listening to music. You know, that's it. I mean, it's a bit. Those are a bit kind of cliched, empty words, but they're genuine. You know, that's what we want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. You can check out The Tangent at thetangent.org. You can check them out on Facebook at All Tangent Members. You guys are not active on the Twitter and Instagram. Is that correct?
No, we don't bother with those now. Yeah. No, not yet. We might have to one day.
Good for you. Nobody should bother with this.
It just looks like a battlefield to me. I think I'd better off out of there. Yeah. But I mean, like, Facebook's tough enough, you know, because even I get sort of like problems with sort of unsolicited and, you know, bad mail being sent to me, which says nasty things, you know. So you don't particularly want that on a daily basis.
Andy Tillison, The Tangent, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you talking to me about to follow Polaris. Hope it does really well for you. And thanks for coming back on the show.
Well, thank you very much. And of course, it's actually my privilege to talk to you because, you know, you guys who do this kind of thing bring artists like myself to people's attention, which is kind of like a part of the equation, really. So, you know, value very much what you do. And thanks for taking the time to do it and talk to me. Yeah. So thank you very much indeed.
Michael's Record Collection is hosted and produced by Michael Citro. Logo graphic courtesy of Jerry Cutchins. Follow Michael's Record Collection on social media, at Mike's Records on Twitter, and Michael's Record Collection on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. If you like what you hear, you can support the show through our Patreon at patreon.com/Michael's Record Collection. For the free newsletter version, go to substack.com and just type Michael's Record Collection into the search bar. Thanks for listening.